Welcome, everyone, to Living Undivided. I'm Chuck Mingo, your host, and I am a bridge builder, and I believe in bridge building. And that's why we do this show every week. I mean, there's just no denying it. Conversations around race or really any difference in our culture tend to get intensely heated and also shamefully hushed. And so every week on this show, we want to press into what, since 2015, thousands of people have been doing, and that's leaning in these conversations, having them doused in grace. And we've seen hearts change. We've seen divides close. We've also seen hundreds of people activated and making a difference in the areas of racial solidarity and racial justice. And so every week on the show, we want to bring you people who are actively seeking justice, who are doing the work of bridge building. And the goal is that you too would see yourself as a bridge builder, that you would lean in the spaces and places where you are, and you would step into that tension with grace and healing, and you would be one who lives undivided. So this week, I'm really excited to introduce you to a woman named Megan Johnson. Megan comes to us from Cincinnati, Ohio, where she's a campus strategy consultant to Interfaith Youth Corps. And she's going to be talking about what that work is that she does. She did her undergraduate at Georgetown. She did graduate work at University of Chicago Divinity School, and it really sparked her interest in bridge building and youth activism. Prior to what she does now, she worked for 5 years for an organization called Seeds of Peace, where she developed leadership programs for youth in conflict zones, specifically in the Middle East. And so she's going to talk a little bit about what she learned, how that sparked this bridge building muscle in her, and also about the work that she does today. Currently, she is part of the Episcopal Church of the Redeemer in Cincinnati, where she serves on the vestry, which is the leadership body of the church. And she's involved in a great, great movement there called Becoming Beloved Community. And so she'll also be talking to us about that. When she's not serving, though, Megan and her husband love to spend time playing with their kids and exploring new green spaces in Cincinnati. So to kind of tee this conversation up, I want to ask you, we got people from all over the country who are listening in. What's your favorite green space in your hometown? Tell me about that. So I've lived in Philadelphia, and if it was in Philly, I would tell you it's the Platte, Belmont Plateau. All my Philadelphia people know what I'm talking about. In Pittsburgh, it was a place called Schenley Park. I actually proposed to my wife in Schenley Park. And for me in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is also where I live, it's a little place near my house called French Park. So what about you? What's your favorite green space? While you put that in the chat, I want you to welcome my friend Megan Johnson, and she's going to tell us her favorite green space as we get started today. So hi, Megan. Good to see
hi,
you.
Hi, Chuck. Nice to see you, too. Thanks for having
me. Absolutely. I'm glad. I'm so glad that you could make it and say yes to this. And so I'd love for you to just kind of, you know, reveal you and your husband kind of that you go around and you check these places out. So what's your favorite green space in Cincinnati?
So our most recent favorite find is Summit Park up in Blue Ash. And the reason we love it so much is because not only is there a big green soccer field for my son to play soccer on, mm-hmm. I mean, he's never without a soccer ball, but mm-hmm. there's this path that goes around the outside of it that's flat and perfect for little kids to learn how to ride their bike. So we've spent many hours up there with training wheels and without.
Yes. My kids love Summit Park. It's also a great one. And then they just created that whole kind of like naturescape, playscape area with all kinds of zip lines. It's just really fun. It's a really fun park.
So
great choice. Well, hey, we could spend the whole 20 minutes talking about parks in Cincinnati, but obviously we're here to talk about some of the critical work that you're doing to build bridges in our city and beyond. But I'd love to just kind of go back and tell us a little bit about where did this spark come in your life around being a bridge builder and working across differences?
Yeah. So I grew up in Southern California in Santa Barbara. And I was surrounded by a pretty homogenous Christian bubble. My parents were devoted members of our Presbyterian church, and we were involved in all kinds of youth groups and various service opportunities through church. And it wasn't until I went away to college that I had my first meaningful relationship with someone from a different faith background. And it was during my junior year abroad at Hebrew University. So I spent my junior year in Jerusalem. Where I first began to understand that there was a different cultural norm if you lived and grew up in a different place. And I was on the academic calendar for the university. It's a Jewish, the National Jewish University at the National University in Israel, and they went by the Jewish calendar, we had classes on Christmas Day. So that was like the moment where I thought, all right, I am in the minority here.
I am somewhere else here, right?
Somewhere else. And what does it look like to be in the minority for the first time? And to really think about, okay, I'm adjusting, I'm learning, I'm growing. And I just really fell in love with Israeli culture that year, with my Israeli and Jewish friends, with the food, with kind of exploring the Jewish roots to my Christian faith, with the Galilee, with the, you know, just the beauty all around me, and the history of the country, frankly, of sort of founding this country out of the remnants of the Jewish people after the Holocaust. And it was, I was just taken by this story. So then fast forward, I go back to Georgetown for my senior year, and I have taken enough classes at the Hebrew University to get a minor in Middle Eastern studies, but I have to take a couple kind of core courses. So I show up to these courses on the Middle East, which I hadn't taken prior to going away. And I sit down in my first class on minorities in the Middle East. And a woman comes in, she sits down next to me, she's wearing the hijab, the face head covering that Muslim women often wear. And we strike up a conversation and she says, why are you in this class? And I said, oh, I just spent my junior year in Jerusalem. I'm back. I'm, you know, taking this class to get this minor. And she said, oh, I'm from Jerusalem. That's my hometown. And I thought, really, where? And we sort of do this geography thing. And turns out her family lived next door to where my dorms were. But the way that East and West Jerusalem are divided, I was on the West side, which is the Jewish side, and she was on the East side, which is the Arab side. And I had no knowledge of her neighborhood, of her story even. And it became clear as we developed this friendship that I had been immersed in this beautiful culture, but I'd really missed this opportunity to learn and know about the Palestinian neighbors who were literally living next door to me during this experience. That's how divided this city was and my experience was. And it was through her story of sharing the limitations that her family has faced and the, you know, she can't move from here to there without the right permit. And her brother was imprisoned wrongfully for, you know, participating in this demonstration. The reality I had experienced the year before started to shake a little bit. And I couldn't quite figure out how both of these narratives, while true, were in opposition to one another. And that was just an awakening moment for me.
And struggling to reconcile the two, you know, experiences, right? Two very real experiences in the same location, but very different at the same time. So So what did you do? I mean, how did you get from there to trying to reconcile that or trying to reconcile other differences that you encountered?
So, you know, I think this was providential. I was, that was my senior year. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I graduated. And the next week, I saw a flyer for a presentation by the founder of Seeds of Peace. He was coming to the place where I was interning. I went, I met him, and I heard about the story of this place. So John Wallach was his name. He was a journalist. And he had been reporting on the Middle East for years. And it was always, he felt the same story of violence, of retribution, of violence, of retribution. And so he founded this program that was a summer camp in Maine, where he invited teenagers from the Palestinian territories, Israel, Egypt, and Jordan were the first participants to spend 3 weeks at this summer camp in Maine, living in the bunks together, eating together, playing sports together, and then having this dialogue time where they're really kind of talking about the issues and their experiences and their feelings. And I was blown away. I thought, this is it. This is the answer. This is that middle space that I was trying to figure out or find out.
I like that middle space.
I said, I'll do anything. I want to come work there. He said, oh, I've filled all my counselor positions, but will you answer the phones at the camp office? And I said, absolutely, I will answer the phones. So I went up there that summer and I went from answering phones to being a counselor to working for him full time for 5 years, both in Jerusalem again and then in New York where the headquarters are. But that first summer there was really powerful for me. And I lived I guess it was the second part of the summer, I lived in the bunks with these teenage girls, mm-hmm. from these Palestinian and Israeli girls who were coming together at this camp. And I remember just being giddy over the silliest things, like they're sharing toothpaste at the sink. You know, this is forgiveness. Yes, yes. This is reconciliation. and then it grew to be a deeper admiration, mm-hmm. for the work, mm-hmm. they were doing, knowing, yeah. that their families, their histories were all in opposition to what was, yeah. happening right here, yeah. in the lives of these girls. And I had I'll tell you, a real crisis of faith, in the sense that growing up in this bubble of Christian culture, I had carried with me that Jesus is the path to reconciliation. It is, mm-hmm. in Jesus' name. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching this Muslim and Jewish girl be reconciled to one another, and Jesus is nowhere. Like, no one's talking about Jesus. Mm. And I really had a moment of, what does this mean for me as a Christian, yeah. when I've never seen reconciliation as rich and deep as what I'm watching right here? Mm-hmm. And it made me have to kind of break apart the language I use, the framework that I use, to know that Jesus works beyond just the, mm-hmm. confines of the church, if that, mm-hmm. makes sense. But it, yeah, took a while to get there. At first, there was a, yeah. little of a, right, what do I do, right. here?
Uh-huh. Well, I love that you're honest about that, because I do think that, you know, I think for some of us, the reason that we don't go further into these kinds of spaces of reconciliation is a fear of, mm-hmm. what happens if my faith is rocked by, mm-hmm. what I learn. And yet I've learned over and over again, it's really only in those places that my faith gets deepened. Mm-hmm. And I realize how much of a veneer has to be peeled away from the religiosity that oftentimes I can put behind my faith. I mean, you know, I think about, like, what you're talking about with, you know, two people who don't yet know Jesus, but have a religious expression, but finding a third way, right? And in, yes. many ways, if you think about Jesus represented that third way. He wasn't all this, he wasn't all that. And it was this powerful new reality that Jesus came to usher in. So I love that you would have that experience there. And I want to fast forward, because some of the work that you're doing right now, I would imagine, is inviting you into similar spaces. So talk a little bit about Interfaith Youth Corps, what it is, and what you're doing with young people and leaders today.
Yeah. So Interfaith Youth Corps is a nonprofit that's based in Chicago, mm-hmm. and I have been working there for coming up on 15 years. So when we first, okay. started, it was a lot of bringing students from different religious communities together for service projects in their community. Okay. So, mm-hmm. the real kind of heart and soul of our work is to say, the question is, you know, how do we live in a religiously diverse democracy? How do we thrive? Mm-hmm. And the way we answer that question is to say, mm-hmm. we need to have respect for people's distinct beliefs. We need to have spaces for people to create meaningful relationships with one another. And then we need common action for the common good. So the idea is that we can identify those shared values across these traditions and bring people together to act on those values in order to make our communities stronger. And so at first I was kind of, you know, we'd bring a van load of teenagers from the mosque over to the synagogue and the Baptist, mm-hmm. church and the Episcopal church and the Catholic church, and everyone would come together, and then we'd walk down the street and go pick up trash in a park. And, yeah. so we'd be kind of picking, yeah. up and caring for the environment, and then reading scripture and other religious texts about, mm-hmm. care for the earth as a way to, mm-hmm. learn about one another's traditions and really kind of speak to, what is it that inspires me to be here today? What is it from, yeah. my faith that's calling me? So that's, yeah. kind of the essence of the work. And then that has expanded. Now we're working primarily on college campuses, where we're training, mm-hmm. leaders, students, faculty, and staff, developing, mm-hmm. curriculum, writing strategic plans for interfaith engagement, talking, yeah. about accommodations for different identity groups. So, mm-hmm. it's a lot of kind of campus-centric work, as well as, mm-hmm. Thinking about how are we sharing stories of how people can be partnering across those differences, yeah. To make our communities and our country stronger.
I love that. I love the three things you said: respect for differences, a space for relationship, and then common action for common good. Mm-hmm. That's just so important and so needed. And so to think about that. So, I mean, you are for 15 years, you've been engaging with, you know, young people, people from across a lot of different religious perspectives, but all American youth. What do you think we should be inspired or encouraged to know about the next generation of leaders coming up in this country?
That's a great question. And I'm learning every day, right? I find so many differences already from the generation that's in college now and how and my own college experience. I think a big thing that we're learning is labels just don't mean as much as they used to. So there's just a lot of desire to define for themselves what their faith is and to look beyond some of the categories that used to be so defining. And so you've got, whether that be that, you know, increasingly the largest percentage of students coming onto college are the ones that write none in the box of religious identity, right? So in our work, we can't rely only on the Muslim student group and the Hillel and the, you know, InterVarsity to come together. You're going to miss a whole swath of students
that have faith.
Or perhaps it's coming from an ethical or philosophical commitment, but they are also contributors to our diverse democracy. So we try to cast a big net and say everyone is welcome. So that's been one learning, is that we're trying to find language and space that is inviting everyone into this project. And then I'd say there's a little bit of not a little bit. There's a lot of trepidation to say something that's going to offend someone else. So people, right, they're sort of tiptoe in to these conversations. And we find that in other spaces as well. But especially, I think, with this generation of college students is
totally
right.
That makes sense. I mean, they're growing up in a cancel culture, right? They're growing up in, you say one wrong thing and all of a sudden that's it. There's no grace. There's no second chance. Right. So it would make sense that they would be shaped by that.
Yes. And and that can be challenging when part of respecting identity is identifying the differences. Right? It's the distinctiveness that's so rich. So if you are sort of cautious about, oh, I don't, I'm not really sure I want to disagree with how you're framing grace or forgiveness or, you know, what it might be, that we kind of have to adjust for that and to create space to really pull people in to feel comfortable and confident to share.
That's good, man. That's so good. And I mean, you know, we could, like I said, there's so many good things you're doing, Megan, and we're running out of time, but I want to just quickly talk about the work that you're doing within the church, specifically within the Episcopal Church, Becoming Beloved Community. So let me start by asking you this. I mean, obviously, you know that this is a passion of mine, that the church should be in this space, particularly talking about racial differences. So what's your reason? What would you say to somebody who says, why should the church care and be engaged in becoming beloved community?
Yeah, well, so the moment that this became very real for me was in 2015, the shooting at Mother Emmanuel Church in Charleston. And I was horrified, as we all were, by the deaths of nine African-American members and leaders in the church. And what struck me over and over again was that they were at Bible study, right? They were praying together. And I just thought, what am I going to do as a response to that? I am in Bible study and praying together. I never think about my safety. So what am I going to do? And what's the church going to do? What's my white church? I go to a predominantly white church. How are we going to respond to this? And so that sort of sparked this question for me of thinking about the role of the church. And it was the first time I felt a real responsibility around racial justice personally. I mean, it had always been part of the conversation at Interfaith Youth Corps. You know, you can't, I can't speak to you about my Christian identity without speaking of my white female Christian identity, right? Those are all intersecting. But I hadn't thought of it as a personal, something that I personally needed to take action toward. So I think, you know, part of the Episcopal Church's baptismal covenant is we get to, as many churches do, when you have someone being baptized, you know, the whole church stands up and we're affirming this baptism and we repeat the baptismal covenant. So we are also reaffirming our own baptismal vows. And it starts with some sort of doctrinal things that you agree to, but then it ends with these actions. And so it closes with, you know, affirming the dignity of every human being. And I think as I have said that over and over again, and seeking it to serve Christ in all persons, loving your neighbor as yourself, and we say, I will with God's help. So it's this part of, I see God in others because God created all of us in God's image.
I
think that's the foundation for me, is that, and that's been the foundation for bridge building between Israelis and Palestinians, between Muslims and Hindus on campus, and now between, you know, people from different racial backgrounds. I think we can't build unless we know what the foundation is. And for me, it's that all people are created in God's image.
That's right. The theological term is the Imago Dei, right?
Yes.
We're all created in the image of God. And that foundational principle drives the work that you do. So, hey, give people a call to action. You know, 2020 has been a crazy, crazy year. What are you leaning into aggressively right now as you think about the year that we've had? And just encourage our listeners on what would you encourage them to be leaning into in this moment as well?
It's a great question. So the work we've been doing at Redeemer around becoming beloved community started with a pretty long chronological look at race and racism in the church and in our country. And by the end of that series, it's called Sacred Ground. It's a video series. And by the end, it is pretty difficult to deny that racism has been woven into the structures of our country from before its foundations. So that gave us just a pretty big picture view of the challenge that we're facing. And now we've turned toward more of the inner work. So if that's the big picture, then what does that look like for me? And we're working our way through a couple reflections geared toward white Christians, really thinking about where are there places where I am complicit and I don't even know it? Where are there places where, you know, I am benefiting from these systems and I just wasn't aware? And there's hope there too. I mean, that's the thing. It's I would say the work is hard because it causes you to doubt things that you thought were true. Like, I'm a good person.
Totally.
I am, right? Like, I'm here.
It takes me right back to you meeting that woman from Jerusalem and realizing that even though you had lived in her neighborhood, you had a very different experience. And I was thinking about that when you said that story, that for so many, particularly white people and white Christians, that's exactly what it's like as the veil begins to be lifted on parts of our history as a country that we just don't get exposed to.
Yes. That's exactly right. And in the same way you said, when we go into those conversations, we deepen our own faith when we're talking with someone from a different faith. I don't think that this is making us any less of a community member, any less of a good person in the sense of contributing.
Right.
It's making you better because you're addressing, you're identifying, you're naming, and then you're going to go after what you can do to respond. But we can't do that if we don't see it.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I love that in what you're saying is the encouragement to all of our listeners is we got to start with that, right? I mean, I'm a big believer and I'm learning more and more about the difference between having a perspective and having an analysis. Like, we can all have a perspective on the racial history of the United States, but it's different to have an analysis, to really dig into it. And when you do, it changes your perspective. Probably not surprising, right? But then that whole piece of the inner work, that really the work that needs to happen for me to be the person in the world I want to be, it has to start inside of me, right?
Yes.
My justice journey starts with me. My reconciliation, my healing journey, my solidarity journey, it starts with me, and obviously me and God and in relationship with God. And so I just am so excited about the work that you're doing. And I wish we had more time to unpack it all. But just in these last few minutes, what are some ways people can connect with you or the work that you're doing? Go ahead and kind of help listeners know how they can engage further in the work that you're doing.
Yeah, great. So if folks find Interfaith Youth Corps, our website, you can see we've got a couple different ways to get involved. One is we have a platform called Interfaith America, where you can read stories written by people from different religious and secular backgrounds about racial justice and reconciliation, about anything really. It's a great platform. Sift through that. We also have a new curriculum that is Interfaith Cooperation in Civil Rights. So it really unpacks how interfaith relationships powered the civil rights movement in the United States. So looking at King and Heschel and looking at, you know, King's inspiration from Gandhi and relationship to Thich Nhat Hanh. I mean, it's really this web is so powerful and such a great inspiration to all of us. So check that out. Awesome. If you haven't already.
Awesome. I love it. Final question, Megan, you're doing it, but define it. What does it mean to you to live undivided?
I think for me, it is waking up in the morning, walking out my door and looking for that Imago Dei, looking for God in the other person. And if I can do that and I can help others do that, then we're building this undivided community.
Yeah. Megan, love that. Love the work that you're doing and so thankful for you taking time to, this has been better than a walk around Summit Park.
Just getting
to talk with you today. So I appreciate you and appreciate your time.
Well, likewise. Thanks so much.
So I love what Megan ended with, and I just want to challenge all of us. You know, usually these come at 9 at night. We air them at 9 Eastern time. And so for many of you, maybe this is one of the last inputs before the day. But if you're viewing it at a different time, I just want to encourage you to do what she said. What does it look like tomorrow to wake up? And as you walk out your door, to look for the image of God in every person you interact with. That, my friends, is a way for all of us to live undivided. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next time.